Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, September 6th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everyone. It is 67 degrees, partly cloudy here in upstate New York. It was a very pleasant weekend. Hope everyone had a good final kickoff to the summer. Kind of sad, but it's already like they flipped the fall switch here. Started even seeing a couple orange spots on the trees already. So where did we leave off on Thursday? That's where we're going to go back to. We titled the show Biological Insanity, Drinking Water, and Crazy New Viruses. And we looked at a lot of this biological insanity that's been going on with CRISPRing and genetic modification of organisms from a bacterial and a virus level to foods, to humans, to gut bacteria, from a Department of Defense perspective. That's where everything tends to start, is at DARPA's end of things, and then spreading out to the universities and then to the corporations and all the tech billionaires that want to get involved. We have good old Georgie Church. We've talked about him many times. We listened to an interview where he discussed the creation of CRISPR and being able to use sequences to zip and unzip and cut and paste pretty much DNA within an organism. And if you remember a while back, there was an argument about whether or not CRISPRing was even considered genetic modification anymore, because in genetic modification, you typically had some sort of DNA from another organism that you then made a virus into a Trojan horse, and you put this other genetic material inside of it and then got it inside of the new organism to go in and modify. But this is going right into the organism and modifying that organism itself. So with some of the new laws for GMO, there have been issues now because they do not want to consider CRISPRed food in particular as genetically modified. But we've also seen that there are connections to the U.S. biowarfare program that never really ended. We traced that back to Fort Detrick, Maryland, and Plum Island. And on Friday, we listened to an interview by Edward Hammond. It was from 2008, and it was just before all this CRISPR stuff really took the center stage. It was titled U.S. Bioweapons and Defense Insanity. And Edward Hammond had been the director of the U.S. Office of the Sunshine Project, which was an organization that was focusing on the oversight and the lack of oversight involving biological and bio warfare agents and research. And even though Nixon had inked that agreement saying that we would no longer be participating in biowarfare programs, remember, they have always been continuing that research on the defensive side. And even Hammond talked about that. I was very, very surprised that someone brought that up because it never ended. So he documented the history, basically, of the biowarfare program and how it kind of worked its way into where we are now. And if anyone wants to follow him, I actually found him on Twitter. He is doing similar things, but he no longer has that Sunshine Project. But you should subscribe to him on Twitter. His Twitter is twitter.com Prickly Research, P-R-I-C-K-L-Y, Research. I'm going to reach out to him as soon as my life mellows out here. School starts this week, so things should get better very soon. I'm going to reach out to him and see if maybe we can get him on as an interview, because that would be great. But anyway, so we established, listening to that interview, that our biowarfare program never ended, and it really has evolved into now this genetic therapy from healthcare, gene drives for eradicating mosquitoes and other annoyances in our environment. You know, I'd mentioned on Thursday, maybe, that there was a story that had come out from Oxitec, the company that spun out of Oxford University that is responsible for these Aedes aegypti Oxitec genetically modified mosquitoes that are being released around. Of course, all in the name of the manufactured Zika. That's why they did it, I think, is to get these things in the open. And of course, it's if they cause an emergency, they'll have to have a problem reaction solution. And genetically modified mosquitoes are the ecological choice. You know, there was a an article that came out this weekend, maybe it was Friday, in South Carolina. They were spraying for Zika, of course, Zika everywhere. And they ended up killing millions of bees. And they're like, whoops, we used the pesticide and it killed all the bees. A friend of mine in Texas said, too, that they come around once a week at like midnight and they blow down the street and just blast the stuff. It looks like the movie The Fog. It's all this pesticide crap that, of course, you know, no one's ever gotten anything in a mailbox that gives all the outlines of what's being sprayed or when or what the schedule is to make sure you have your cats and dogs inside or your kids' window closed at night when they're sleeping. So what is the insanity here? So, hey, you know what? Problem reaction solution. Let's just genetically modify these organisms that have been studied ad nauseum in the biological warfare program of the United States as part of entomological warfare, and that is the mosquito. We also read that story about the Japanese researchers who had genetically modified mosquitoes to be able to produce and to give vaccinations. They were engineering them as flying vaccinators. And remember, Billy Gates had talked about something similar and curing disease in one of his TED conferences. Well, there's a story that came out from Oxitec August 27th, 2016, so back about a week or so ago. Americans love genetically modified mosquitoes much more than other GMOs. Can you say propaganda? When the news started to spread about a planned release of genetically engineered mosquitoes in the Florida Keys, it seemed laughable. And I'll tell you what, the residents have been screaming from the rooftops. The idea was to release hordes of genetically engineered male mosquitoes that would mate with the disease-carrying females and cause them to produce non-viable eggs. The average Facebook post on it was something like, LOL, you've got to be kidding me. I think that was me. No, not really. I don't see that much reaction anymore. A poll out this week found that 60% of Florida residents now support tweaking genetically modified mosquitoes to fight diseases, while 30% remain opposed. This isn't statistical noise. Polls are consistently finding that big majorities of Americans now support the idea. Ding, ding. You know, put out a couple stories about dead bees and spraying pesticides and keep spinning the yarn that it's more ecologically friendly. Of course, we looked at the big problem with a lot of this genetic modification that's going on is that there aren't really any checks and balances. There's no one really watching the store. there are all kinds of transgressions happening in laboratories that aren't getting the proper approval from regulators on some of these organisms. Some of these organisms can be modified to be dangerous. Some of them were dangerous and are being modified to be even more dangerous, like we looked at the other day with the bird flu, not one but two published studies on how to do it. And then, of course, the 1918 pandemic that the CDC messed around with to make it even more virulent than it was. We found out in that interview from Edward Hammond that none of these labs have anybody who is paying attention. And our worst fears, the questions that we have been asking, where's the bio-level four, since we found out things such as obesity could be contagious. You know, as they're flipping these switches on jeans and stuff, who's got an N95 or an M100 mask on in a lab? They have nitrile gloves and white jackets, and that's about all I've seen. Where are the quadruple glass panes and the vacuum in the anteroom between going inside and outside, just like you would with infected blood with some sort of Ebola or whatever in it? You would think that they would be exercising the same precautions, but they're not. And now we have flipped the switch. Well, we haven't, but Oxitec has flipped the switch on the public to think that genetically modified organisms being released into the environment without any controls whatsoever, no long-term studies, all in the name of Zika. And of course, you know, we got this $1 billion floating around here in the United States to combat this killer problem that is overtaking the globe as a pandemic. Well, let's see. Disdain, they say, has morphed into support. What happened? Well, in a word, Zika. And yes, in a way, they are right. They put the fear into the hearts of Americans and the world. Of course, it was in the center of the Olympics, too, with the polluted water and the Zika epidemic. And do you know that Oxitec had opened a GMO mosquito factory in Brazil as well? And they've done one or two different trials already releasing the mosquitoes. And they've done clinical trials of a Zika vaccine down there. It was the accumulation, of course, of those pictures of babies with Zika-related microencephaly. And you knew that's exactly what they were out to do. Keep showing these pictures of these babies with half brains. And they started tugging on the heartstrings. And the news that Zika-carrying mosquitoes are now buzzing around Miami, and the realization that, oh, God forbid, climate change will usher the disease further north. Everything is in the name of climate change. This is a demonstration of the way humans, those particular creatures that I'm going to interject, are so damn gullible. Yes, and how they grapple with risk. And there is a principle at work here that helps explain why we reject things being as risky, and then we embrace others. We shrug off those suspicions of cell phone radiation, but worry about our genetically modified foods, even though neither has demonstrated harm. And I would disagree with that. There are many studies showing cancer risk increases and brain tumor risk increases and DNA damage by utilizing cell phones and other electromagnetic radiation close to our bodies and being bathed in it 24/7. So I am definitely going to argue with that. There was some new study, I thought, from some U.S. entity. Most of the time it's overseas. But just recently I thought there was something that came out about cell phones. Like, whoops, we've been wrong all along. It says, we fret about nuclear accidents. Notice they're doing a train wreck here of every single one of our ecological concerns. But don't think twice about people driving cars through our neighborhoods like a triple meltdown has anything to do with imperfect people driving cars, even though a total of 3 people have been killed by nuclear power in the United States. Listen to this, hippies. While 100 are killed in car accidents every day. This can be explained, the author says, by what I call, a bit grandly, the self-centeredness principle of risk perception. Well, I am not condemning this mode of reasoning by using the pejorative term self-centered. The observing that our institutions about risk are informed by calculations centering on ourselves and not centered on humanity or the planet. Well, that's true. And you know what? They take advantage of that fact. Not in my backyard is another thing that I've heard it called. And when it's in your backyard, you finally give a shit. But until that happens, you don't. The benefits of any change are distributed unevenly when the benefits are centered mostly on others or diffused among many. It is easy for me to embrace a scary sci-fi scenario, but if it becomes clear that I stand to benefit, well, I want to know how lucky these scenarios are, and I will weigh the pluses and minuses of change. Yes, so they are really pushing us to change. So let's go the genetic modification in these little flying vaccinators and see what happens. You know, that'll be the next step. They'll be flying with Zika vaccine inside of them. I wouldn't doubt that. Says, farmers and seed companies, of course, reap most of the benefit from GMOs, and the rest of us get lower food prices, yes, and illnesses. But that the benefit is spread so thin that most of us haven't even noticed that we're eating GMOs. But there's another story. When you see benefits, mobile phones are so clearly beneficial that people can't stop using them. You know, there was a story that another hit piece saying that people have been talking about this addiction to devices, something we've talked about on the show many, many times, and the push button of dopamine. There's another hit piece saying that they are not addictive and they need more proof and blah, blah, blah. And they are coming out full metal against anything and everything that we have been trying to get out there is raising red flags and concern. Like, there's nothing to worry about. Go back to sleep type articles. Anyway, it says last year, a survey of people in Key West found that 58% opposed them, the GMO mosquitoes, to control Zika, where in these latest polls, they only found that 30% of Floridians were opposed. And that is not exactly comparing apples to apples, but it does suggest a shift, because this was the whole state versus just the Keys. A real test will come in November when residents of the Florida Keys now vote on releasing these mosquitoes. Now, I just saw something recently. I think it was in Tobago, which is out somewhere near the Indonesia somewhere, where they were supposed to be considering releasing GMO mosquitoes. The guy in charge, whatever he is, prime minister, president of Tobago, had come out and said to Oxitec that if the price was right, that he might consider it. You know, meaning don't charge us $10 million, but we might do it for $1 million if you give me the mosquitoes. And I was finding all kinds of stories of people in opposition, different countries coming out saying, don't you dare, you don't know what you're getting into. And it doesn't appear that that's happened. So maybe there is some global pushback that is coming from the furthest reaches of little island nations that are being used as incubators, like Cayman Islands. But, and I think also I saw recently that Cayman canceled another release of those mosquitoes. So that's two for two, and that would make me very happy. So doing genetically modified mosquitoes, so when we dug into that research, we realized that they were utilizing CRISPR technology, and that is where we first started reading about CRISPR. They could do a couple different things. They could do population suppression or population elimination just by changing and removing different genes and putting in different things within the mosquito. So how about this? I had to laugh. The story has an ad for me from 23andMe to order my DNA kit now. It's out of Popular Mechanics, January 26, 2016, 11 gene hacking things that we can do with CRISPR. So what can we do with CRISPR? Well, number one, they list on here, and this is out of a paper where 600 research papers had been published, where they took this data from mentioning CRISPR and talking about how the technology is growing. And remember, it's all just the beginning. So any of the insanity we're seeing right now is just the tip of the iceberg of what the next 10 years are going to be. Number one, craziest of 11 things we could do with CRISPR, we can actually remove malaria from mosquitoes. Did you know about that? Researchers created mosquitoes that are resistant to the parasite that causes malaria. And we had also, when we read that story out of Japan with the researchers that made the flying vaccinator mosquitoes, they had actually utilized bacteria for tularemia, I believe it was, which was that elephant man disease. And not only had gotten the bacteria into the mosquito, but somehow utilizing this bacteria had the bacteria producing an antidote to the tularemia, and was able to utilize them to vaccinate against the disease. So I, you know, knowing that Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has been sprinkling funding into these genetically modified mosquitoes, and knowing that their foundation's big push has all been about eliminating malaria, and our number one top craziest thing we've done for CRISPR with CRISPR is removing malaria from mosquitoes, makes me think that there may be some interesting things coming in the future. Number two, of course, the way they really are trying to push this out there into the masses is the dangling carrot for cancer and cancer cures. Number two, eliminate a patient's cancer. This medical marvel actually wasn't achieved using CRISPR, but using a similar gene editing tool called TALEN. And again, this seems to be a little dated because we now have them CRISPRing humans. That trial is supposed to be starting in December here. Still haven't seen anything about the Chinese trial that was supposed to have happened in August to edit T cells, the patient's T cells with CRISPR, and then put them back into the individual to be able to recognize different cancerous cells and destroy them. But yes, CRISPRing humans all in the name of curing cancer is something that we will see in the not too distant future. Number three is treating muscular dystrophy. So Jerry and the kids might not ever have to worry again. Is Jerry Lewis still doing those telethons? I remember him from the 70s. Duchenne's muscular dystrophy is caused by a mutation that prevents the body from producing dystrophin protein, which is critical protein in the development of muscle tissue. People who have this genetic mutation suffer from muscle degeneration that is ultimately fatal. But because the mutation that causes muscular dystrophy only affects a specific gene, the disease is a prime target for utilizing CRISPR-Cas9. Researchers have successfully treated muscular dystrophy in lab mice, and just this month, and this is back in January, used CRISPR to treat and cut the dystrophin gene. So look out, guys. Now, this one, I believe, was in China in that cloning factory making hulked-out goats and dogs. I saw as part of that cloning and genetically modified animal and future human, the owner said, factory in China. Not only were they working on dogs, cloning dogs, Fido had died, but they were also working on cloning and editing, making these bulked up dogs. I think they might have been bulldogs that they were thinking might be good for security. And I mean, these things had like 10 times the muscle mass. They were very frightening. Then, of course, the cows, they were experimenting with the cows and editing in human breast milk genes into where the cow genes had been. And they talked about being able to pump out a million of these GMO or cloned cows in a year. But yes, Chinese scientists have used CRISPR-Cas9 to delete genes that inhibit muscle and hair growth in goats to supplement the country's commercial meat and wool industries. It's pretty crazy. Oh yeah, beagles, that's what it was. They also did the same thing for a few beagles, which the reason for which, is, according to this story, is not quite clear. China is aggressively researching both genetic engineering and cloning, and that's what I said. And it is possible that these two technologies become a common method of expanding livestock and agricultural industries. Huge, delicious cows that don't get sick rolling out of a cloning factory. It could happen. And I would second that opinion. Number five, we've talked about this one as well. Giving pig organs to humans. Ding. George Church, here's our buddy of the Harvard Medical School, recently led a team of scientists that used a complex CRISPR molecule to edit 62 genes in pig cells at once. And I think this might have been this human-animal chimera hybrid thing. Church believes that this technique could be used to make pig organs suitable for transplantation into humans. The team's experiments also represented a step forward in CRISPR technology by using the tool to edit many genes at once, a method that could be imitated to make more complicated changes to DNA quickly. And remember, George Church is also the man that is spearheading not only bringing back the woolly mammoth and some of this de-extinction science that is coming down the pike now. We're going to look at that, I think, here next. I think he has some stories lined up. But also, George Church is the man who called together those 150 scientists at Harvard to discuss the synthetic creation of the first synthetic human genome and be able to create synthetic humans. He is also a part of that Broad Institute that got $32 million from DARPA for the manufacturing of DNA. So look out, people. George Church is a biggie, and he is someone to pay attention to. Number six, and I'm surprised they put this in here because I've seen now a bunch of papers stating that these tests have failed, at least according to the Chinese, treating HIV. HIV inserts its DNA into the genome of the host, and while it can lay dormant for years and certain drug cocktails can keep it in check, there is no way to make the virus permanently inactive. Researchers have demonstrated that CRISPR can be used to remove the virus's DNA from the patient's genome, but a big problem is that it is difficult to locate the HIV DNA in latent cells that don't demonstrate any of the symptoms associated with the active virus. More detailed models of latently infected cells are being developed in an attempt to find genetic sequences that could be cut out of the virus to render it harmless. Now, for a lot of conflicting information about HIV, I've mentioned it a few times, but Tim Kelly had an interview back, we aired it a week or two ago, on one of the random replays with a woman who was a gynecologist who had gotten interested in studying HIV and dug way deep, and she started calling absolute and utter bullshit on the whole thing that it's even caused by a virus. She said that it was some sort of nutritional deficiency and was listing out all these different things that she had found in her actual research and looking at blood and tissue samples and whatever. So, you know, that's been touted for a long time, and it doesn't surprise me that they're trying to say that we can maybe cure HIV because it is a virus, and the Chinese are saying no, there's other issues here. So I guess we'll see on that. Number seven, developing new kinds of drugs. And yes, there's all kinds of new drugs, and this is using these little bacterial factories, including the Synlogix, again, funded with some Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation money. There are some other places that have Google money in them, and a lot of these tech companies that are finding ways. 23andMe is another, the drug development company that is going to be based upon looking at DNA sequences and creating gene therapies. So it's not really even medications or vaccinations. These are gene therapies. Drug companies are eager to invent new ways to deliver CRISPR gene editing systems to different parts of the body. Well, thank God. Pharmaceutical giant Bayer AG and startup CRISPR Therapeutics. Oh, I bet that's going to be worth $1 million, that name. Recently announced a $300 million joint venture to develop CRISPR-based drugs to treat heart disease, blood disorders, and blindness. This partnership represents not an impending cure for any one disease, but the beginning of a significant and aggressive period of research that they hope could lead to many. And of course, this is all part of the 21st century precision medicine initiative. There is lots of federal funding that is going into a lot of these projects, as well as, like I said, Department of Defense funding that is helping fund this as well, all in the name of keeping us safe and morphing from our biowarfare program. So everything's got a double-edged sword. If you can create life, you can also destroy it. And George Church had talked about CRISPR as a killing machine long before they realized that they could put genes in as well. It was just for cutting and editing. Number eight, another crazy thing they've made are super plants. Humans have been improving the yield and disease resistance of crops for hundreds of years through traditional agricultural methods, but now researchers are experimenting with ways to improve crop disease resistance. So thank goodness we have a new form of GMO that isn't going to be under any type of regulations, of course. improve crop disease and environmental stress tolerance using CRISPR. A research team from Rutgers is working on a long-term project to genetically modify wine grapes and turf grass in such a way that methods can be implemented in a variety of other crops. So hopefully that doesn't mean all wine grapes are going to be GMO. Because, well, downy mildew, I get that on other things. Vines, typically, grapes will be edited to resist downy mildew. And a type of grass commonly found on golf courses, of course, for the rich and famous, called creeping bent grass, will be modified to resist the spot dollar spot disease, which is a problem usually combated with fungicides. And if successful, scientists could develop new, healthier crops to supplement the agricultural industry. Number 9, engineering mini pigs. And yes, this is something they've been doing in China. Chinese researchers created a particularly small variety of the Obama pig by disabling one of the growth hormone receptor genes in the pig's fetal cells. These little piggies will only reach about 30 pounds when full grown, and they plan to sell them as micro pig pets. How lovely. Number 10, sheep blindness. We read about this. This is a genetic mutation that causes rhinitis pigmentosa, a disease that ultimately leads to blindness. After a single injection of CRISPR-Cas9, the rats were able to see better than the control group, and they plan to use a similar technique on humans, and that experiment is already underway by a technology company, Editas Medicine, and that is the one that Jennifer Doudna is involved with, is planning to use CRISPR to treat this inherited eye disease, congenital amaurosis. And of course, number 11, the craziest CRISPR thing ever, editing humans, gene editing. You know, they didn't even talk really about food. They talked about agriculture in general, but we're going to look at a little of that. And then bringing back long extinct species, gene editing humans, as well as in the case with the infant girl who was treated for leukemia with engineered T cells. So they've done that already, they said, but scientists aren't likely to stop there. Researchers at Francis Crick Institute in London want to genetically modify human embryos. And then we found out they also gave them the go-ahead in the U.S. as well as in China to learn about the earliest stages of life and potentially reduce number of miscarriages. Experimental proposals make people worry that engineering technologies will be used in the future to create designer babies with perfect traits. And we are a far cry from that. So don't worry about it, because it's going to cure all your disease. We're also going to create nutraceuticals and make your food better. We'll be able to genetically modify CRISPR mushrooms so they don't turn brown. And you knew it was only a matter of time, but here we go again, playing on the minds of the public who are easily manipulated. Was a researcher just served the world's first CRISPR meal? This is going to normalize it. That's all they got to do. For probably the very first time ever, plants modified with genetic scissors called CRISPR-Cas9 has been cultivated, harvested, and cooked. Ding, ding. D. Professor in plant cell and molecular biology served pasta with CRISPR-y vegetables fried to a radio reporter. And although the meal only fed two people, it was still the very first step toward a future I don't want to be in, where science can better provide farmers and consumers across the world with healthy, beautiful, and hearty plants. Did you hear that? Listen to the spin they are putting on this. CRISPR coming to a table near you. That's what it should have been called. CRISPR, more affectionately known as Cupidol, anybody? I'll help. Clustered, regularly interspaced, short palindromic repeats, Cas9 is a complicated name for an easy but targeted way of changing genes of an organism. And remember, it's not just plants. It could be people. It could be animals. It could be insects. It could be mushrooms or apples or potatoes. It could be mosquitoes. It could be the neighbor next door. Be afraid, be very afraid. They're going to be under every bed. The decisive discovery of CRISPR was published in 2012. And we remember we listened to George Church talk all about this. It came out of nowhere, he said, by researchers at Almea University. And the Swiss Army knife of genetic engineering has now been predicted to change the world. With CRISPR-Cas9, researchers can either replace one of the billions of letters present in an organism's genome, and that's the A, T, C, and G, or remove entire short segments similar to when you edit a written text in a word processor. The technology is called gene editing or genome editing. The first clinical applications are now underway, and maybe we can soon cure hereditary disease using this technology. However, the situation differs somewhat in the agricultural field. The issue is not if researchers can create plants leading to a more sustainable land management, ding, ding, but rather if these will be allowed in farming. Well, let's hope not. Will plants whose genomes have been edited using CRISPR-Cas9 fall under GMO legislation or not? And this is a story from September 5th. So this was yesterday, 2016. If they do, it makes them illegal to plant in great parts of the world. And if not, they will, just like any other plant, be allowed to be grown at the farmer's own discretion. And look out, because I have a feeling they will allow this. They've already set some precedent on that, stating that CRISPRing is not genetic modification, even though it is. It's just so retarded that they're saying it's not, because it's not using some other organism's DNA. It's just modifying the existing DNA. The EU has avoided answering the question, but in November 2015, the Swedish Board of Agriculture interpreted the law as if only a segment of DNA had been removed and no foreign DNA had been inserted. It is not to be regarded as genetically modified. So there you go. So blame it on the Swiss. No, on the Swedes. That also means that a plant can be cultivated prior without permission. And in the spring of 2016, American authorities stated that they agreed. And that's what I thought I had read. The organism in question was a mushroom who had lost the part of its DNA that made it go brown. And these are these CRISPR mushrooms we were talking about. And this opens the use for the technology to develop plants of the future. The summer has been the very first time that plants have been gene edited using CRISPR-Cas9 in a way that does not classify it as a GMO and have been allowed to be cultivated outside of the lab. So here we go, people. Another genie out of the bottle. This definitely is the first time in Europe. And even if it had been done in other parts of the world before, it had been kept secret. Yeah, remember that. A lot of this is done behind closed doors or without telling anyone. That was one of the things that Ed Hammond kept saying about lab accidents with some of these pathogens in the biowarfare program, that just because there aren't a lot of stories of having lab accidents and things such as tularemia getting out in Boston and infecting different researchers who had then left the facility, that they weren't reported. And because it wasn't reported, of course, it doesn't show up on a report. But it doesn't mean that things aren't being done. And that lab in Boston with the tularemia didn't even have approval to be using that pathogen from the feds at that point in time. But anyway, so this is definitely the first time in Europe. And even if it had been done in other parts of the world before, it had been kept secret. But this time, it was a cabbage plant. And the Radio Sweden gardening show, Oda Mead Part 1, took part in the harvest, leading to the probably first ever meal of CRISPR-Cas9 genome-edited plants. Oh, my God. The first CRISPR meals to have been enjoyed was, I don't even know how to say this, tagliatelle with CRISPR with a little Y at the end, fried vegetables. And the CRISPR plants in question grew in a pallet collar on a garden outside of Umeå in the north of Sweden, where neither particularly different or nicer looking than anything else, says the plant scientist Stefan Jansson. But they represent both a new phase of agriculture where scientific advances, ding, they want you to believe everything and not ever question, will be implemented in new plant species. And to that, a small or large extent will be made available to farmers across the world. In other words, a meal for the future. Now, guys, just like that ad gene sending out 60,000 copies of CRISPR technology all across the globe to anyone and everyone who wanted to be able to mess around with splicing and dicing in the garage or the shed or mommy's back bedroom, we find out that there's no controls whatsoever. And once CRISPR is out, it can be copied many, many times. We have all these foreign actors, those good old foreign actors, and China. China's way ahead of us, guys, that are messing around with this technology. I think the world's going to be a very upside down place here very, very soon. And if this doesn't show a little bit of that, this is one of these George Church mad science gone mad experiments. Woolly mammoth DNA, and I've mentioned watching this documentary, inserted into elephant cells. The idea of bringing extinct animals back to life continues to reside in the realm of science fiction. But remember, we also have lots of rich tech billionaires who want to live forever. And people like Kurzweil who want to cure death as a disease. Now there's many, many, many of them that are working on such technologies with little nanobots and artificial intelligence and DNA splicing and dicing and merging with electronics. The whole transhumanism thing is in full swing. Well, why not bring things back from the dead? Scientists have taken a small step closer to that goal by inserting the DNA of a woolly mammoth into lab-grown elephant cells. Harvard geneticist George Church and his colleagues used a gene editing technique known as what? Ding, ding, CRISPR, to insert mammoth genes for small ears, subcutaneous fat and hair length and color into the DNA of elephant skin cells. The work has not yet been published in a scientific journal and has yet to be peer-reviewed, but woolly mammoths have been extinct for millennia, with the last of the species dying out about 3,600 years ago. But scientists say that it may be possible to bring these and other species back from the grave through a new process known as de-extinction. We're going to look at that because they're doing other ones too. We won't be seeing woolly mammoths prancing around anytime soon because there is more work to do, but we plan to do so. And in one other story that I had read about this whole project, said they were potentially considering Siberia for letting these things go wild. It would be interesting, but what is that going to do? And utilizing these technologies to bring something back that may have carried diseases or whatever that we didn't quite know about is kind of frightening. Who's to say, too, that some of these lunatics in the past who have had their heads frozen cryogenically or whatever potential, I don't know, I've read that Walt Disney's head being cryogenically frozen is all a hoax, but, you know, I don't know about that. Maybe in a lab somewhere underground under Area 51, who knows? And it could be, but, I mean, it's not. There was a story, actually, we got to find that. I don't have it up now, but there was a story about this lab in Texas that is actually cryogenically freezing people for this very purpose, just so when gene editing gets a little better here in the next 10 to 20 years, maybe you could thaw out and be completely rejuvenated. But anyway, woolly mammoths are not the only candidates for a de-extinction. In 2003, scientists briefly revived a Epeirian ibex, which went extinct in 2000 by cloning a frozen tissue sample of the goat. However, after being born, the clone only survived for 7 minutes, so that's a little sad. Several years ago, a group of researchers took DNA from a 100-year-old Tasmanian tiger specimen at a museum in Melbourne, Australia, and inserted it into a mouse embryo, showing that the genes were still functional. And Church himself has been working on trying to bring back the passenger pigeon, a bird whose flocks once filled the sky in North America but went extinct in the early 20th century. Researchers extracted about a billion DNA letters from a 100-year-old museum specimen and are attempting to splice them now into the DNA of a common rock pigeon. And even if these efforts succeed, they do pose some ethical challenges. And yeah, I mean, ethics schmethics, there we go. They have gone completely out a window and smashed on a hard surface, splattered all over the windows, and now have dried and hardened. I don't know. I mean, 6 months, 8 months ago, we were talking ethics, and now there are no ethics. It is just anything goes across the globe, and it has become now version two of this whole global bio-warfare program that never ended, like I said, and they are trying to develop techniques that, of course, are all in the name of saving you or making Nana live longer, but can be used to create super soldiers and biological robots and materials that can be, I mean, we'll read about, I don't know if we're going to get there today, but DARPA's got this program with these living, breathing houses that they're now working on that is like beyond science fiction. I mean, I heard a BBC story last night talking about worms in the soil and pollution and genetic modification and all kinds of different chemicals and being able to manipulate life. And the guests that they had on started talking about terraforming Mars and being able to utilize all of these databases that we have now that have sequenced living organisms to be able to pick and choose traits across the spectrum of life and create new forms. Now, we read that story back, well, many times, probably about a year ago, from the DARPA lady, saying that that was part of what all this research was about. They want to be able to create organisms at the push of a button and engineer life to do things such as terraform Mars and clean up, of course, our environment. Anyway, so ethics are out a window. For example, the ability to revive once extinct creatures in the lab could encourage support for the destruction of natural habitats, says Stuart Pym, a conservationist at Duke University. Other scientists have been cautiously accepting of the idea, and they say, of course, we could use these techniques to help some of our endangered species. Well, it's true, a lot of these species are dying because of things that we never took care of. But on the other hand, should we be bringing species back that maybe died out for other reasons that we don't quite understand? Here's a question questioning some of the ethics. A mammoth undertaking, can de-extinction be ecologically responsible? And this was from about a week ago. They're talking about conservation, and some of the other animals that they are looking at are like tortoises and things of that nature. University of California developed three recommendations for restoring ecological function through de-extinction. The first study suggests resurrecting recently extincted species rather than those that disappeared thousands of years ago. I would say, actually, that's kind of a good suggestion. These creatures may fit more seamlessly into their ecosystems because there has been less time for change to occur. And I would have to second that opinion. Researchers offer several examples of these young extinctions, including Christmas Island pipistrelle bat, the Reunion giant tortoise, and Australia's lesser stick nest rat. Secondly, the group advises choosing animals whose ecological jobs are truly irreplaceable. And that's like one of the things we were talking about with potentials with these GMO mosquitoes affecting things in the ecosystem. Once you wipe them out, what's going to happen to all the bats or all the frogs or all the snakes that don't have frogs to feed on as you start affecting the food chain? So again, I almost would second this opinion. They should be looking at animals whose jobs have been eliminated because they are gone now. For example, Christmas Island pipistrelle bat was once the only, there we go, ding, insect-eating bat in its habitat. Its de-extinction would plug a hole in the ecosystem that nature would otherwise have a hard time of filling. Same thing for the Reunion giant tortoise, whose dispersed seeds throughout the Indian Ocean island before being driven extinct by hungry mariners. Those plants still exist, and although they are moving closer to extinction without tortoises to perform their ecological function as seed distributors, so I'm assuming that they would poop out the seeds. And the third guideline that they are suggesting for de-extinction is to bring back species that can be restored to functionally meaningful abundance levels. You need to have enough individuals to perform their function well enough to affect an ecosystem. One wolf hunting and killing has a minimal impact, but hundreds of wolves performing that function will change the ecosystem. And, you know, that's one thing they've been working on up here in the Northeast. Is bringing back, I don't know if it was the coyote or the wolf, it was one of the wild dogs, but we had quite a lack of wild dogs up here for quite a number of years, as well as wild cats. And just recently, there's been quite a spring back in the population. As a matter of fact, this past weekend, I heard an entire band of coyotes yipping in the hills, so that was quite a thrill for me. Okay, so another story. Geneticists want to bring back the great oak from the dead. You know, I mean, we keep reading about this. Now, remember, it's all in the name of conservation. It's all in the name of, you know, dangling carrots to help the earth, all in the name of climate change. But, guys, this insanity of genetically modifying everything And we're talking now plants, animals, and humans. I mean, we're really kind of outlining all of this and then genetically modifying bacteria and putting it inside of things. This is the Tower of Babel. This is creating life with no real plan. There is no overlying framework or blueprint. And it is happening in a million different places around the globe without any controls. How could this end in a good way? Anyway, I don't know if I want to read about bringing back the great Hulk from the dead. Just know it looks like a duck. It's black and white. I don't even know where it's supposed to be, but it was last seen alive in 1852. It looks like a penguin, kind of a cross between a penguin and a duck. All right, here's a good one. Scientists just made lasers out of human blood. Yes, blood lasers. They could help us, of course, hunt cancerous tumors. Everything is in the name of cancer. Researchers have developed a blood laser using human blood in a fluorescent dye called indocyanine green, more affectionately known as ICG, and it could help doctors search for tumors in the body. So how does this new blood laser work? Well, to make a laser, all you need is a source of light, an amplifying material, and a reflective cavity. Researchers from the University of Michigan have used an FDA-approved dye called ICG, and they mixed it with the blood to play the role of an amplifier. Without blood, ICG just doesn't work at all, says one of the researchers, Zhu Dong Fan, told New Scientist, which is the publication we're reading this out of. But once you have your cavity, an amplifying material, and a source of light, your laser is in business. As Jennifer Ouellette explains for Gizmodo, once you zap the medium, in this case the blood, with light or electricity, zip, zip. Yeah, there's a lot of those programs going on. Remember we read about that ElectRx too, utilizing stimulation, electrical, and zaps and different frequencies to be able to manipulate things in the body. It boosts the atoms to a higher energy level known as excited states, and then the photons are pumped into the cavity. And if one strikes an excited atom, that atom will drop back down to its grounding state, releasing a second photon of the same frequency and direction. And eventually, these continue striking other atoms, releasing more photons until they create a burst of laser light. They're turning human blood into lasers. Blood isn't even the only strange material that has been used to make lasers. Back in 2011, a different group of researchers used living kidney cells to amplify light. And in the 1970s, two scientists made a laser using jelly. And if they can help us locate and diagnose cancer, we are all for it, they say. So again, it is all in the name of cancer or bringing things back to life. Researchers are building a robotic lionfish exterminator, or this one's a killer. We joke around a lot about bringing horrific robot apocalypses. But let's get real. Sometimes building a killer robot is just the right thing to do. And this is not me. This is Engadget speaking. At least when these robots are being used to cull invasive species. Again, this is like so horrible. What right do we have to start wiping things out? Researchers at Robots in Service of the Environment, which is an organization, are developing a robot to fight an invasive population of lionfish that is threatening ecosystems off where? Oh, same places, similar places that they are releasing genetically modified mosquitoes off the coast of Florida, as well as in the Caribbean and Bermuda. Creating a robot to exterminate specific species sounds a bit harsh, and yeah, like good practice for the future is what I'm thinking. But it's an environmental issue. The lionfish population in question is not native to Caribbean waters and don't register as predators to the local wildlife. So by decimating the area's food supply, these voracious carnivores are killing coral reef systems and starving out other species. Culling the lionfish population is essential to protecting the local ecosystem. And unfortunately, there are millions of lionfish and only so many hunters. So the solution, hey, build robot hunters. Guys, we just read something back maybe a month or two ago that I think Lady Pitbull sent me. Shout out to Lady Pitbull about them teaching artificial intelligence to hunt prey. Now all of a sudden we're finding out that they were going to build robot hunters This idea came to Rise founder and the iRobot CEO, Colin Angle. I told you about iRobot. They make the little fuzzy lawnmowers and vacuum cleaners that'll zip around your house autonomously. But iRobot was a military contractor as well. Well, apparently the CEO left, or maybe he's still current CEO, I don't know. But he is the founder of this Rise, this organization that is spearheading this Terminator robot hunter. And his idea came after witnessing firsthand this issue in Bermuda. His group has since designed a concept robot capable of electrocuting. This is doing extermination via electrocution. I mean, have we not dubbed ourselves full gods now, where we can decide who lives, who dies, and how we can splice and dice you to make you different if you have defects? This is a robot capable of electrocuting lionfish between a pair of telescoping electrodes. The concept is still in its early stages, but the team has been testing a prototype arm in reef waters to make sure that the robot doesn't scare the fish off before it has a chance to electrocute them. And so far, so good. Lionfish don't have many predators and don't seem scared off by the deadly fish zapper. They said it's testing out an actual shocking mechanism on lionfish in aquariums. Oh, my God. Before taking it out to sea. And it has also developed a spear-based lionfish hunter as well. Remember, DARPA has that whole mothership autonomous submarine that they have been launching that has a full belly of autonomous underwater drones. Pretty interesting that they have technology now to go out and start killing things underwater. And we have all these surveillance units that'll be able to travel and identify things under the sea. I would say keep an eyeball out for those being armed as well. It'll be a while before either unit is ready for action, but hopefully the completed robots will be able to keep the population under control and help, of course, help the natural ecosystem survive. Still, it's a little weird to think that under the right circumstances, again, listen to this manipulation psychologically, killer robots can be a good thing. See how they sell this crap to people? Yes, killer robots are good, and genetically modifying people are good, and genetically modifying mosquitoes and letting them go are good. It's all good. It's all being done in the name of good for you. Well, I think last but not least, we will start here tomorrow. Story came out in Newsweek, and some of the other big names, potentially toxic magnetic nanoparticles in pollution found in human brains. Well, who would have thunk it? Researchers have discovered significant quantities of a potentially toxic magnetic nanoparticles in human brains, sparking fears that they could lead to brain diseases. Da, da, da. Well, good thing we have this whole international brain project going on that'll be able to cure all of those brain diseases of the future. The particles made from a form of an iron called magnetite are produced during combustion and can reach high levels in polluted area. All right, well, get on that N95 mask. Make sure that you avoid magnetite and stick around because it is Tuesday, not Monday. Yesterday was a holiday. It's Tuesday. Mr. Kevin Blanch is live up next at 3 p.m. Eastern, a new Ocelli Effect at 7 live. Ron Stevens with Rock the Boat Radio, brand new Barbarian Lounge with Alan at 8. Boys from Primer Time, Michael and Nick, live at 9, and Intermedia Radio with SM Gibson, live at 10. All right, guys, have an awesome Tuesday, and I will catch up with you tomorrow. We'll be right back.
Truth on the Track. You can catch every Monday night and Friday.